Hi, my name is Steve Fleming, CEO of River City Bank, which was founded almost 50 years ago. As a leader in a family business myself and a longtime board member for the Capital Region Family Business Center, I understand firsthand how incredibly important family businesses are to our economy and the unique challenges they face in sustaining from generation to generation. I think that you will find this podcast series informative, entertaining, and even humorous at times. That's why our family business, River City Bank, is proud to support this podcast. I hope you enjoy today's episode.
I think family businesses do this, is just reflect on the enjoyment of being a family business and reflect on the difference of a family business versus a large corporation that's publicly owned. I mean, it's a totally different set of values that you get to play with. Again, it's not all about the bottom line. It's about the overall experience that you get to have and your family gets to have and your employees get to have. Sometimes we forget how different we are as a family business or how different we can be. And there's a great joy in that.
Hello, and welcome to A Seat at the Table, Trials and Triumphs of Family Business, brought to you by the Capital Region Family Business Center, helping family businesses to grow and prosper. I'm Natalie Mariani Kling, your host and a fourth-generation family business member. I am so excited to join you around the table for real conversations about what it's like to grow up in, become a part of, and navigate the complexities of a family business. Special thanks to another family business, River City Bank, for their generous support of this program. Don Clark is second generation and co-CEO with his brother Bob of Clark Pacific, a leading manufacturer of prefabricated building systems. You may know some of their design and building solutions from the 49ers Levi Stadium in Santa Clara or the stunning Apple headquarters in Cupertino, California. In this episode, we talk about what has kept a family business strong for 60 years, despite being in a very volatile industry. We discuss the joys and challenges of co-CEOing with a sibling, and the strategic mentorship and development program that Don and Bob have implemented to successfully bring in existing and future family members. Welcome, Don, and thank you for being here.
Well, it's great to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Don, you are second generation in a company that's 60 years old. Tell us how Clark Pacific began and bring us up to 2024.
Okay. So Clark Pacific began in 1963. It was an offshoot of a large general contracting firm in Sacramento. They had about 3 acres, and they started this prefabrication facility to work on one specific job. And once that job was over, they continued on and tried to do some more work. They were planning on shutting it down. And my dad at the time was around 28, 30 years old and had just started working for the general contractor about 2 years earlier. And he saw that as a big opportunity for himself. And he begged the owner to let him go over there and manage it. So that's how he got involved. And that started around 1966 or 67, that my dad became the general manager. And from there, he gradually grew it. We had a big opportunity of working with a huge firm back east, big developer back east, to do a standardized building system, which allowed our company to grow rapidly. That was in the late 70s and early 80s. About that time, my dad asked to be a partner and was able to buy in and become 50% partners. And I started in 83 and my brother started in 84 as project engineers. And eventually, by late 80s, we were able to buy our partner out, and the three of us became third partners.
Watching your dad from an early age in the company and in the industry, what's your memory of growing up in the company?
Well, I remember as a very young kid, probably 6, 7 years old, being able to go visit the plant and go on weekends with my dad. At about, I think it was 11 or 12 years old, I became the janitor. It was a very small firm back then, and I was the janitor of all, so every Sunday I'd ride my bike over and clean all the offices. And by 16, I started working out in the yard on the weekends or during the summers of helping to clean up and move parts around. And yeah, so those are all fun memories. Just remember my dad just being, he loved what he did. He had always had all this enthusiasm and always felt that he was stretching himself to do new things and learn new things. So just, it's a very, very positive memory that I have of my dad and the firm.
Did his enthusiasm influence you and your brother?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And then his enthusiasm did, as well as we love what we do. We're all hands-on people and love to build and love to create. And, you know, of course, as a college kid, at some point I said, it should be fun to do something on my own versus go into the family business. And yeah, that took about a year to work through and realize it'd be even more fun to be able to work with my dad and my brother and start with a foundation that I get to build on top of.
What kind of impact did your dad have on the industry?
Well, prefabrication was just beginning in the early 60s. So they had to develop all sorts of ways to do this, you know, from just develop the business and develop our base product of how to take the panels out of the forms, what the forms would look like, how to connect the panels on the job, how to transport them, how to erect the panels onto the buildings. So all that stuff needed to be developed.
Were those all innovative processes with your dad?
Yeah, all innovative processes and all sorts of finishes. We had to learn, you know, what kind of finishes could you achieve successfully on these, our type of product. And anyway, he spent an awful lot of time with the R&D and the just on the development of what we could do.
And what's the size of Clark Pacific today?
We have approximately 1,000 employees. We go up and down from about 800 on the low to about 1,500 on the high.
And tell us a little bit about the business cycles that I'm sure influences the amount of employees you have at any one time.
Yeah, so construction follows the business cycles. When the economy slows down, construction slows down. However, it's accentuated substantially. We may have, instead of having like a 5 or 10% drop, it's usually a 40 or 50% drop in the volume of work that's out there. So our goal, of course, is to be the last into a recession and the first out. But it's also complicated because our business, the prefabrication, you have large facilities and large equipment, large amount of capital tied up. So when these cycles hit, and you never know when they're going to come, it's when you least expect them. When everything's going great and it's not going to change and you're ready to make big investments, and all of a sudden it hits you kind of in the blind when you didn't see it coming. You have to be prepared for it, though, which means you can't be over-leveraged.
And how have you and your brother weathered those cycles through the years?
Well, weathering those cycles is an art form, I would say. You're being very, very careful about borrowing money and about, you know, leasing equipment. You're trying to buy things as you go. You got to be very careful with your growth. You have to be able to slow down rapidly, and you're trying to predict how far do you have to slow down, because the further you cut, the harder it is to climb back out when the economy changes. You also have to be ready to climb rapidly out of it when the economy hits, because you're trying to maintain market share. Apple, which is our largest job to date, it was right during the 2008-2009 recession. We picked it up in 2011, and we had dropped down to 180 employees. And within 14 to 16 months, we had to grow to 1,500 employees.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was quite the challenge. And yeah.
So I would assume that takes a very, very focused, conservative approach to accounting.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And that's part of the, you know, strong relationships with the bank, and again, a very, very conservative approach, as you said there.
Don, talk a little bit about your relationships, because that's a big part of Clark Pacific's reputation in the industry. How have you prioritized those relationships, and how have you built and maintained them?
Well, there's obviously two groups of relationships. One's internal, and just the family environment that we try to have within the company. And then the external relationships, it's really, our business is based on reputation. And even though you have contracts, you want to be able to do it off a handshake, meaning that no matter what, we're going to get the job done. And there's challenges, you know, certainly challenges during COVID when our supply chain fell apart and we were late on some projects due to that supply chain. But no matter what, you stay with it, stay with it, stay with it, and not leave a bad job. And not leaving a bad job, it has to be not just on the surface. We have to know in our heart that what we did was right.
And how do you continue a family culture when you grow to the size that you are, 1,000 to 1,500 employees, say? How do you communicate that culture, and how do you make all those employees really feel like they're a part of a family culture?
Yeah, good question. You have to do it, not strategically, but you have to be intentional about that. And part of it, you do it in all sorts of ways. We have a monthly meeting, you know, which right now is a webinar, basically, where we got the whole company on there, you know, at least all the administrative people. We do plant talks where we have our facilities all come together and talk to the people in the facilities about what we're doing and where we're headed. And we put on a family picnic every year. It's kind of fun. You know, one by itself is fun, but over the years, it's really interesting because you get to watch families grow up and people's kids grow up. You get to know the spouses. We also put on a Christmas party for all of our employees and their spouses. And again, same type of thing. You're trying to form that continuous bond year after year where you're able to see each other as a couple. And we also have, you know, a certain number of dinners that you're going to with, you know, with groups of people to celebrate wins and celebrate different milestones of a company. But I think it's intentional what you're doing. And when somebody gets in trouble, you got to be there for them. And they know you are.
Can you give us an example of a time when maybe that happened and how you handled it?
Well, not specific as much as in general. You know, all of our lives, you know, we have a lot of people who have been with us for their whole career. And during their life, they may get sick for a period of time. And you're there when they're sick, or their spouse gets sick, or they have a special problem with a child, or, you know, all those things all go together. And how do you work with them during those times? And, you know, and we truly care. Being careful with the rules, that there aren't overly hard rules in the HR area where you can't have some flexibility of treating people differently.
Right. I think that's one of the biggest messages around family is to prioritize employees' families.
Yeah.
Because then you're really confirming that family is a priority for everyone.
Very much. And, you know, an interesting part of that is COVID, what COVID did to all of us, where we, you know, all of a sudden learned that we could work remotely and change some of our hard and fast rules. Now, we've required everybody to come back to the office. But with that, we have a lot more flexibility because somebody has a kids game at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you know that, you know, they're all set up with the home setups now for their computer system. So they're able to plug in at 7 o'clock that night and finish what they had going. So there's an awful lot more flexibility that revolves around family than what there used to be pre-COVID.
That's really great to hear that level of support from a CEO. I think that must feel really good to be an employee, knowing that there's that level of flexibility.
Yeah, you know, it's a win-win for everybody when you're able to do that.
Don, you co-CEO with your brother, Bob.
Uh-huh.
What are the benefits and challenges of co-CEOing with a sibling?
Well, good question. I'll back it up a little ways because we worked, you know, with my dad for 25 years, the three of us. And it was you have your challenges, but overall, it was just a wonderful time. And my dad just had a special way with us where he let us run. He didn't overpower us. He let us make our own mistakes. We all handled different areas. We had strategic meetings, you know, offsite strategic meetings on a regular basis. And it was just, you know, it's fun in a family business that you got you're together at business, but then you're also, when you're together at family events, you know, that you're still, it creates a very, very special connection, which was wonderful. And then when my dad retired, my brother and I all of a sudden realized that my dad was playing referee a lot more than we realized, you know, because we were both able to have, we both have strong personalities and strong opinions, and didn't realize what a role my dad played in helping us resolve those differences of opinions. So we started, really had to back up and say, okay, wait a minute. But, you know, how can we function together? And we, let me back up even further, right? When Bob and I both started working together, we basically created a blood pact between the two of us that no matter what, any decision, we'll always put the other person first. We'll always think about how it affects the other person and make sure we don't make a decision that doesn't benefit the other person first. And we've been able to keep that. You know, it's effort. It's a conscious thing that you practice. So when my dad retired, and this is right around when the Great Recession hit, my brother and I said, okay, what do we need to do so we can work better together? And one of the things was putting a lot more effort into our relationship outside of work. So we started going to CrossFit together. That was like 14, 15 years ago now. And we'd go 3 days a week or so and just had the best time cheering each other on. And that developed the relationship pipeline between us that allows for, we'll call it, larger conflicts that you can get through because of that. By trusting each other and having that big trust, we don't have to be in each other's meetings. We have different areas, different strengths. We recognize those different strengths. We have both work in our different areas. However, when I'm working on something that's a little outside of the normal, he knows I always will bring him in for consulting and vice versa. I don't like to be at a meeting where he's already has it under control because I can't contribute anything. Mm. Anyway, it's been looking at my life now and in my early 60s and just what a total pleasure working with my brother. I couldn't have a better situation. We just, you know, totally love each other and totally support each other. And for quite a few years, you'd always hear, oh, that doesn't work when you got two CEOs. And the reality is, I believe that the two of us combined are better than one plus one. I've been able to work in my strengths. He's able to work in his strengths, and combined, they're stronger than the sum of the parts there. So it's been very, very successful for us from a business standpoint and just a pure fun standpoint.
How beautiful and unique, I would think.
Yeah.
I know that you've had family members come and ask you for mentorship about co-CEOing as siblings. What kind of advice do you offer?
Well, what's easy is to focus on the difficulties and think about all the conflicts. But if you get them to back up and realize how much they care for each other and how unique it is to get to work with your sibling and look at the bigger picture of what you're really doing and then say, how can we really work together to be effective? Yeah, so we've done that with a couple different families, and all of a sudden the light went on, it seemed like, and they've changed the perspective of, instead of focusing on the problems, let's focus on our strengths. And let's work to our strengths and work on our relationship and our trust. And anyway, it's really, really powerful.
Yeah, I really thought it was so smart when you were talking about building the relationship outside of work, because obviously that was important for you and your brother.
Right.
But also you have prioritized it with other people in the office and maybe leadership or other employees.
Yeah.
Tell us how learning about somebody in an outside of work affects being at work together.
There's different ways I'll answer that. You know, one is I have a saying that I use is there's no perfect people, but there's perfect teams. Mm. You know, and part of all of our jobs in management is how do you combine people into the right team and how do you recognize their skills so that you can do that? The better you know the person, the better you can deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think, you know, we spend so much time with each other at work that there's a lot of value to all of us to know each other outside of work. So I'd say it's good from a relationship standpoint, just for the enjoyment of life. One of our basic rules, we only hire people that we enjoy being around. And so it makes it easy to want to be with them outside of work.
That's a great value to live by.
Yeah. You know, So it's part of a family atmosphere is to want to spend time and to spend the time outside of work. And it's also beneficial to the business.
Have you and your brother had to create boundaries? Because I think as siblings, you know, it's easy to have late night phone calls and keep it going at birthday parties. And does that work for the two of you? Or have you had to be intentional about creating boundaries?
I don't think we've really had to create boundaries. I think it happens on its own to a degree. we enjoy our work. Our families are part of it. They love that we love our work. And I think both of us are conscious that you got to be careful too.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have your other hobbies. You got to have your, can't all be about work.
Right. What other family members work with you?
Well, we have four nephews that work for us.
What's been your process of onboarding family members and setting expectations?
It's been a very intentional process. Three of the boys, you know, all work in the plant as laborers during the summer and as well as a carpenter one summer out in the field. It's similar to what Bob and I did, you know, so they've had a chance to learn the business from the bottom up. They started off as project engineers. Our concept is we're going to open the doors. We're going to give as many opportunities as we can. We'll give as much advice as we can, but it's on them. And what we don't want to do is over-promote them or overpay them. It's not fair to them and it's not fair to the business. So that's part of it. You know, part of it was we heavily coached them on their relationship between the four of them. They, I think, every Friday morning get together for a breakfast, and they are very intentional about that relationship between the four of them. Now we're coaching them on, again, no perfect people, perfect teams concept. You know, they got some strong personalities, and we're saying, hey, don't rely on Bob and I to check those personalities. You guys got to check yourselves by keeping each other accountable, and don't let somebody run too far in the wrong direction. The other item that we did is we hired an outside, we'll call him coach, you know, that's done a beautiful job for at least the last 10 years or so with them, where he meets with them. It was monthly. It might be quarterly now. Initially gave him a lot of business coaching, relationship coaching. Part of his job is if there's always going to be a situation where somebody thinks they're better than they are, how do you communicate that without, you know, even though they're extremely valuable, how do you do that in a softer way? You know, and that's part of that coach's job, as well as, you know, as we figure out how in the future we're going to organize. Part of the coach's job is to help us with that too.
Has it been helpful to have a third-party facilitator with family-specific issues so that you and Bob aren't having to do that yourselves?
Yeah, it really is, especially if somebody that, you know, built trust with them and is a third party. You know, and it's good for Bob and I too, because, you know, sometimes you forget they're 25 years younger than you.
Yeah.
And our experience level versus theirs, and forces us to stop and really think back how good we might have been back in those days, which, or what our experience level was, and making sure we're looking at it properly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's been very, very healthy for them and healthy for us, and I'd strongly recommend it.
Has it protected the family relationships?
Yeah. You know, it definitely has, because there's, no matter what, there's going to be, you know, we got four phenomenal nephews that are just doing an outstanding job, but it still doesn't matter. You still have those conflicts, and to have a third party like that that has developed trust with all six of us really helps.
Yeah, that sounds so smart. How did you know to do that?
It was through the Family Business Council. That was a suggestion made, and I don't know by who at the council, but that was something some other families had done. And we heard that and said, okay, that's for us too.
That's great.
Yeah, especially with four, you know, it gets more and more complicated the more you have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You and your brother, speaking of family members, how many children do you have between you?
Well, I have four, and Bob has four daughters and two stepsons.
Oh, wow. Okay. And you don't currently have children involved in the business, but I'm sure, assuming you like the idea of children being in the business, how do you have those conversations with them?
Well, yeah, good question. You know, as a parent, a business owner, you've got two things going on, and it seems to me anyway, or at least myself, we had two things going on in your head, is that you don't want to over-encourage them and say, hey, you got to follow my path. On the other hand, you're saying, this was a darn good path and a heck of a lot of fun. And I want to make sure I share this with you, that this is not a bad path to be on. And I think it's easy to go too far one way or too far the other way.
Right.
My three daughters all worked some summers with us, and one of them worked a little bit after school with us, but it wasn't the right fit from their perspective. One was an engineer, but she went on, now she's going to be a professor. That was more her style. One was went into education, and one went into working at a nonprofit and marketing. Now, my son, he's in his junior year at college and studying mechanical engineering, and he currently wants to work for Disney Imagineer. And he's darn good at it, you know, and so we'll see what happens there, you know. But at the same time, he's an engineer, and he says, yeah, you know, after so many years, I do want to come back to Clark Pacific, but you just can't tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in our previous conversation, you expressed how proud you are of each of your children.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you find sometimes that you have to bite your tongue?
In which manner?
Around probably this hope that you have that maybe someone will come back, or maybe you can sell it in a way that that'll make them see the light.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's with my son. You kind of want to say, hey. You know, he's worked there as a laborer, and he worked there as an intern in engineering, you know, and he loved it, but he has this other dream. And you're trying to say, again, trying to find that right balance. But to say, you know, and as a parent, you know, the main thing you want is your kid to be happy.
That's right.
But it's kind of hard to figure out what that means sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then how do you balance that?
That's right.
Yeah. Yes, so I do bite my tongue.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine as a parent, I haven't had that experience, but I can imagine there's that push-pull of wanting so much to support their dreams and also holding on to that little hope that maybe you could work with them someday, because that's got to be such a fun dream.
Yeah, absolutely.
With such a successful company as Clark Pacific and with the great reputation you have, it would be reasonable to have conversations around selling.
Uh-huh.
But you mentioned to me that you and your brother have a desire to really keep it a legacy company. What motivates that for you?
Well, you know, my dad being there since the mid-60s, I guess there's all sorts of things that motivated it. You know, it's not all about the money. I'm sure we can go sell it and sell for a fairly high price, but then what? You know, Bob and I both get just a tremendous enjoyment out of this year. We've had two people that just celebrated their 40th year with us. And in one way, you feel a responsibility to your employees that people have trusted their entire careers to you, not just to your employees, but to their families. And you watch people come to work, get married, have kids, raise the kids. The kids are now out of the house, and now they're going to retire, you know, and you go, wow. And all of it was with us. And you go, that's a wonderful, wonderful feeling for everybody. It's a, you know, it's a success. You'd love to be able to continue that and continue the values that we have as a company. I can't think of why we would not want to continue that on if we can achieve it. And our four nephews are very, very strong. Plus, we got some other extremely strong managers, and there's no reason why we can't. If we saw that we didn't have a good way of doing that, I'd think differently. But I think this would be best for our employees and best for our company.
Do you and Bob talk about, because you have strong family members that could take on leadership, but as far as ownership, assuming it would go to your children, how do you fold them into a conversation around owning but not working at the company?
Well, one question is that really what you want to do? Does it go to your children? Or if so, how much of it? Is that what the legacy is about? You know, I think Bob and I have both decided we're going to hang on to a certain percentage that'll stay, you know, eventually go into a trust, but there won't be obligation that trust doesn't cash out on that at some point in time. My dad's 1/3 that my brother had bought when he retired, we have sold to our four nephews. There's not a clear answer on how to do that. You know, in some ways I've seen families where they're in their third or fourth generation and pretty soon there's 30 owners and they're not really tied to the business. Is that what you're really trying to do or not? And I don't think that is. You know, I'd rather have people tied to the business. There's a lot of value and power in that.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think that's a major question among family business owners is how do you transition a company that you love so much and you care so much about, and also creating a situation where you're not creating entitlement or all the landmines that can come with giving ownership and all the possibilities. There are so many possibilities, and it's a challenging thing to walk through.
Yeah, it is, and it's something everybody has to do their own program. I mean, we've all of us at our age, you don't want to ruin your kid or spoil your kid. I mean, part of it, the fun is building their own career paths.
That's right.
You know, and if we've all seen a lot of kids get messed up with that, you know, if they're getting money too soon or that they didn't earn. And anyway, those are all no easy answers on any of that.
That's right. Have you sought advice for those conversations and thought processes?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we've talked to other business owners, you know, that may be a few years ahead of us and what they've done and what they did, they were happy with, what they did not happy with. We've had different consultants that specialize in this, and you find there's all sorts of ways people have done it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
So we're still finalizing that, but that's anyway.
Yeah. I'm sure it takes a long time.
Yeah. And we're actively working on it.
That's right. And you have some time.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. So that's good.
Yeah.
In 60 years of business, Don, can you share a time when you didn't know whether you might survive?
I can probably share several. So one of the key time frames was during the Great Recession there in 2009 or so. And we came into it, you know, we were fairly healthy coming into it. And just the market totally collapsed. One day we didn't know how we were going to get all the work done. And 3 days later, most of it had gotten canceled, you know, and so you're just a rapid change. So it's a different strategy to use because you don't know how long they last. And the further you cut, the longer you can last. But again, the further you cut, the harder it is to climb out, you know, or to, you know, because you're losing muscle when you cut too deep. So you're betting on how long it's going to last, how long can you last at a certain rate. During that recession, about a year into it, that's when the Apple opportunity came up, and it came up as not that large of an opportunity, but then it kept growing. And because it was sitting there as an opportunity, if we cut any further, we wouldn't have been able to do that opportunity. So, but you didn't know whether it was a 50% opportunity, a 30% or a 70% chance you're going to get it and what the timing was. So you're constantly kind of mapping that out, and we bet that was going to come in at a certain time frame. We developed it into an extremely large opportunity. We thought we were going to get it negotiated, and we did all the mock-ups and developed the systems and everything else to do the job. And at last minute, they changed the players, and all of a sudden, they wanted to do a worldwide competition for the project.
Whoa.
You know, and so this is, again, all the time where we still didn't have enough work for ourselves and we were hungry as can be. And you're saying, okay, are we doing the right thing? And so anyway, we bet on ourselves and won it. So that's one. You know, two, just recently coming into COVID, we were healthy and then all of a sudden COVID hit and the market collapsed. You know, office buildings just went to zero, and that's one of our mainstays. Parking structures, which go along with office buildings, slowed down substantially. So we're going through COVID and post-COVID, you know, and saying, okay, what do we do? We had made some mistakes. We're in construction. When you pick up a job, it stays with you for 2 or 3 years. And we had made too many rapid changes trying to increase our volume right prior to that and picked up some complicated work that we had to work our way through that wasn't necessarily priced at the right amount. So we had all those different challenges going through, and part of it's just you attack it from a business and an engineering perspective that no matter what, you got to do a good job and maintain your reputation, no matter how hard it gets. When you cut, you got to be careful. Bob and I always have healthy debates on this. How far do you cut your sales and marketing? Because, you know, without sales and marketing, you can't pull yourself out. So we maintained the sales and marketing. We've spread outside of California, started looking for work outside of California, and landed a major job up in Idaho for a chip manufacturer, and landed data centers and all stuff we hadn't done before in Phoenix, Arizona. So now we're going to, you know, this year and next year, we're going to have record years. But part of that was all the decision-making as we went through of maintaining the sales and moving more people over to it to support it.
Don, because your industry is maybe experiences more volatility than a lot of industries, and because it's on such a major scale, when you're navigating that, how do you take care of your own mental health, your emotional reactions to things? How do you get through those times?
Yeah, good question. I guess we grew up on it, and my brother and I both enjoy it. And you're trying to make sure you stay enjoying it and not and keep things in perspective as you're going. I enjoy the constant challenge. I enjoy the pressure. You know, at the same time, when you're saying, okay, I can't see the horizon, can't see how to get through this, but you believe in yourselves, you know, believe in our company, you believe in your people, you believe that we've been through tough times before and we're going to figure out a way to get through it. Part of that's exercise, part of that's eating right, making sure you get your sleep. And when you say not bring it home, you know, we all bring it home, but you're trying to minimize bringing it home and you're trying to, again, keep it in perspective.
I'm sure you have learned a lot of that over the years. And how much of that did you get from watching your dad too?
Yeah, not just watching him, but working with him as we went through our own challenges. Definitely a lot from my dad and it's really keeping your cool, having the nerve, not just the nerve, the confidence to make the hard decisions. I guess the other concept is, like with business, all of us business owners, what happens is you say you got an average of 50 that you're traveling, you got to be willing to pump it up to 70 or 80 or 100 for these periods of time when you have the trouble. And sometimes you forget that, but you have to put that extra juice in and rally the troops to put the extra juice in when you're trying to get through these tough times.
Right. And a lot of that too is having your family support, because that's going to mean longer hours and more commitment, right?
100%. Without my wife Karen's support and my kids, it would not have been enjoyable and probably not possible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything that you would want to share with other family businesses who are listening?
Well, just one is, and I think family businesses do this, is just reflect on the enjoyment of being a family business and reflect on the difference of a family business versus a large corporation that's publicly owned. I mean, it's a totally different set of values that you get to play with. Again, it's not all about the bottom line. It's about the overall experience that you get to have and your family gets to have and your employees get to have. Sometimes we forget how different we are as a family business or how different we can be. And there's a great joy in that.
What ways do you specifically see that a family business can be different than a larger corporation?
Well, going back to what I talked about in these long-term careers with us, you know, and those long-term careers only happen because you treat people with a different type of respect and different type of care and be willing to be there when they need you to be there, you know, as a company. You know, companies can bring in lawyers to help people. You can bring in business support. You can loan money. You can do all sorts of things in special situations that you could do as a family business that you can't do as a non-family business.
That's right.
Yeah.
Don, thank you so much. Your passion and enthusiasm is contagious, and your love for family business and the joy that you find in it, I think, is so important for other family business members to, as you just said, reflect on and appreciate, because those are the possibilities of a family business and the reasons that you would want to keep it going. So thank you for sharing those
things. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on. I enjoyed
it. You're so welcome. Thank you for listening to A Seat at the Table, Trials and Triumphs of Family Business. If you like what you heard today, please be sure to subscribe, post a positive review, and share with another family business owner. For more information about the Capital Region Family Business Center, visit capfamilybus.org. That's capfamilybus.org. You can also follow us on Facebook at Capital Region Family Business Center and on Instagram at capfambiz. B-I-Z. We're grateful for the support of River City Bank to make this program possible.
Hi, this is Steve Fleming of River City Bank, and we're proud to bring you the Capital Region Family Business Center podcast series.